the ROI Guy.
Hi, everyone. This is April Morley.
And welcome to the Value Coffee Talk podcast.
This podcast is a service of the Enterprise Value Collective, a community for business value-focused leaders and practitioners, and is sponsored by our value consultancy, Genius Drive.
And our mission is to help accelerate and optimize your value articulation in each of your customer engagements and throughout the customer lifecycle. And to help us understand some of the best practices in this, we've invited Andy Day. He's the Chief Marketing Officer, CMO at Verado. He leads go-to-market strategy, planning, and execution globally with a focus on customer value and impact. Prior to joining Verado, Andy's held several strategy, marketing, product, and GM leadership roles at just a few companies here, SAP Health Sciences, GE Healthcare, Tableau, and Alteryx, where I'd imagine that's where he met April. And he helped grow their healthcare and life sciences business 300 to 600%. Most recently, he was the CMO at Meta Analytics, headquartered in Richardson, Texas. Welcome, Andy.
Thank you. Thank you for that those kind words and that generous introduction. April's an old friend. I've known you for a long time, so it's a real pleasure and an honor to be here and talking to you guys.
Awesome, and love seeing the companies in your resume there, from SAP to GE Healthcare, and now at Verado and the data sciences company. Just amazing. We're here to talk value, obviously. We're the Value Coffee Talk. When did you first become kind of familiar with a value-based approach to sales and marketing, and what impact did that have on you?
Great question. So this is going back in time. So believe it or not, the company that originated value selling of software was actually the company that brought me from being a consultant, right? A strategy consultant to enterprise software, product management, product marketing, headquartered right here in Dallas, Texas. It was called I2 Technologies. Mm-hmm. And their mission statement is, we will drive $100 million in value for our customers by the year, you know, whatever, right? They put a target on it.
Yeah.
And they literally did value-based selling of what was basically supply chain constrained planning software, which is fundamentally about driving efficiencies, right? By looking at your constraints and managing them. And they use a third party to actually measure value for every customer. They built what I believe was probably the first portfolio, the first cadre of value engineers, right, who were mm-hmm. all former BCG, Bain, McKinsey consultants, endowed and embellished with PhDs and MBAs. They probably had the largest collection of MBAs and PhDs and from all those, you know, stellar consulting firms. And the notion of value engineering, in fact, Harvard Business School actually published a case study. I remember the author, Dr. Anant Raman, from Harvard Business School, actually published a case study, Harvard case study, on value-based software selling, which was attributed to I2. So that was where I learned of this thing. I drank it all in. I had all these guys, you know, next to me. They were like the, you know, rock stars in the company. And then lo and behold, my next employer, SAP, embraced it and raised it to fine art, right? In fact, a lot of the people they employed were former I2ers, right? Mm-hmm. This haloed, you know, cadre of folks who had, you know, done this, were obviously very, very, very smart, were completely endowed with all of the expertise, the nuances, and what it took to make that happen. And what SAP did was take that to the next level. They also introduced benchmarking, right? So literally by industry, SAP went across 26 industries. That's kind of did I2. But for every industry, most of the top 5 or 10 were already SAP customers. They ran their business on SAP's ERP. So it was very, very compelling, right? What was the value that you got from deploying ERP? They had all that documented. And so for the top 3, there is the top 3 in every industry as benchmarks to benchmark a new prospect against, right? So a conversation would be, oh my God, you are a smaller pharma company. I won't name any names. But, you know, if you compare your best practices to Eli Lilly or, Pfizer, the biggest names in the business, you have a supply chain problem that is driving $9 million in value leakage. And we can, of course, you know, fix it for you, you know, with an investment of $2.5 or $3 million. No products were named, right? It was completely a value-driven conversation. First and foremost, of course, the insights took the CXOs by surprise.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that they're being benchmarked against best of breed, very credible, driven by facts and research. And so, you know, pretty easy value proposition for a CMO, CEO and CFO to sign off on it. And lo and behold, and again, the process was very well structured. So 1 year after, you know, ERP was deployed, all of the business processes were deployed, the value engineering team from SAP would actually come back and, you know, do the value discovery and say, hey, you know, we promised you, you know, $9 million. What you've actually seen is $10 or $11 million in value. So we did good. Let's talk about the next level of value that, you know, where the leakage is happening that we can help you fix and so on and so forth. So it was eye-opening for me. It was transformative, right? And of course, average deal sizes of over $1 million to $3 million done in, you know, sales cycles, obviously long sales cycles relatively, but it definitely helped accelerate that. And what that did was almost spark this value war, right? Where every other vendor, which I won't name, every major vendor sought to embrace the model and I think drove, you know, ubiquity. And that's probably where, you know, Tom, you and Alinian got really busy deploying those models for them. And there were a bunch of former folks from this, you know, this haloed value engineering teams who got into consulting services, deploying these models, et cetera. So I think that's how this value-based selling of software phenomenon happened. And I was very fortunate that I was at the forefront of watching it actually become best practice.
Yeah, that's really quite amazing to really see the dawn of value engineering in software and see the impact and effectiveness it has for the organization. And you saw it across multiple companies. And yeah. You've shared in the past that in some ways you've bet your career on value. And I'd love Absolutely. To hear more about that and why.
Yeah, and April, you've been witness to it, right, at pretty close quarters. So Tableau is a great example. Tableau obviously had an amazing visual analytics product, fastest growing company in the history of analytics software. So I was brought in as kind of the guy to build out their healthcare business. As you know, and the term general manager did not exist, but that was basically what that role enabled. I was given about 9 salespeople, only one of whom had background in healthcare, and the serendipity, unlike SAP or GE Healthcare and i2, where you had this high caliber coterie of folks, right, with MBAs from some of the best schools and training at BCG, Bain and McKinsey, we stumbled into Mayo Clinic, Cleveland Clinic, Intermountain Healthcare, Anthem, Cigna, et cetera, who had adopted this kind of Tableau's land and expand model. And the expand, to make that expand happen, most of them had done their value discovery in-house, right? Which was unbeknownst to anyone at Tableau, right? So my magic was literally talking to those customers, looking at the use cases that deployed Tableau for, the business cases that built out, showing here's the value. Hey, we have deployed Tableau for 20 use cases. We have documented about 7 of them. And that was, you know, $8 million in value, driving a payback in 9 months, right? So which is amazing, because I've never had that. It was almost like a gift on a silver platter, right? So my task was literally documenting that, turning that into a library of 100 plus use cases from almost 50 plus who's who in healthcare, and literally enabling the Salesforce to be able to tell those stories, those use cases with the value summarized. And that drove, you know, almost 1400% plus growth over a 4-year period, which I take very humble pride in. The grace of powers far bigger than me, but that's where, you know, April was a colleague. She saw me doing it in healthcare, which was emulated across other industries. And then we were both at Alteryx, and she was instrumental to making, she was my partner in crime in kind of making that happen at Alteryx. And so again, the common thread across all my employers has been that they either were pioneers in value-based selling, or I helped, having come from that school, I often jocularly tell people my middle name is Value. And so I had companies embrace, like Tableau, Alteryx, and Mendy Analytics were great examples of where I kind of was one of the pioneers or was a catalyst to them embracing value-based consulting to Selim, and I aspire to do the same thing at my current employer, Verato, as well.
Yeah. Andy, to summarize, you mentioned two incredible best practice approaches, and I want to see if I heard this correctly. So one of them was benchmark-based, like SAP. When you're wanting to land a new account, go in mm-hmm. with insights about yeah. the pains, particularly the pains they're experiencing. Don't exactly. talk about the product or even the gains yet, and use the benchmarks to show maybe how much of a deficit that they're faced with, where, hey, if you could get to average even, or perhaps even get to best in class, here's what the mm-hmm. impact that could have on the organization. So mm-hmm. leveraging insights to do the discovery and do it benchmark based. And then the second one, really important for land and expand businesses, which is create a use case library for the industry, because yeah. without that, how are you going to guide customers to what the next best use case is, and then have mm-hmm. the value hypothesis, let's say, for each one of those use cases baked? And yeah. Talk a little bit about that. And then are there any other motions that you think are useful beyond just those two, particularly as you're taking the reins at Verato and now in a CMO role? Are there other tactics or techniques that you've seen besides kind of the benchmark insight-based approach and the land and expand use case approach?
So I think the fundamental problem is as follows, right? There's no dearth of companies who have built out value calculators, they've launched initiatives, mm-hmm. and lo and behold, 12 months go by, 18 months go by, nothing happens, it's abandoned, people lose the energy and the momentum, and it falls yep. by the wayside, right? Yep. I call it the last mile challenge. And my takeaway, my learning, if you will, is that it's a chicken and egg issue, right? If you don't have a living library of customer success, value-based customer success stories with the value articulated at a use case level, that's the kernel.
Yes.
If you don't have that, you can't build a value-based business case for investment. Your sellers won't have confidence because they don't have anything to back that up, to substantiate that, right?
Yeah.
So I think building out that living library, which is never ending, you constantly keep adding to that, you build out executive relationships, you have a customer engagement program, a customer advocacy program, you typically bring all of that together. If you have a maturity model, you know, to show where customers stand, that's where, again, the benchmarking kind of comes in. So you really marry the two together. That's where the magic happens. You use the maturity model for engaging with interested customers and prospects. You get the evangelists, right, who, again, want to document the success they've had with the investment, want to build a business case for the next level investment. So that's where the value discovery comes in. Mm-hmm. You turn them into evangelists, right, do the value discovery. Again, it's negotiation, ensure that the customer's completely bought in, it makes sense. And then, you know, offer them the forums, right? This is where, again, strategic marketing comes in. You provide them with the forums, have them articulate that in third-party, you know, webinars. In the case of, in healthcare, it's organizations like HIMSS, Becker's mm-hmm. Healthcare Review, et cetera. And you kind of build your brand by association. And that starts to become a virtuous cycle, right? So when those are publicly available, Tableau was an amazing example. We had almost 30 plus of those webinars recorded. It got to such a point that if a prospect asked for a reference, you just send them the pertinent webinars for that line of business,
mm-hmm.
and they didn't even need to speak to a real prospect, because they need to speak to a real customer, because those are their peers who are really talking to them, you know, via the webinar. So that's like the ultimate example. That's nirvana, right? So once you get to that state, once you've built out this library of defensible, you know, customer success stories with the value articulated, boom, your sellers have the confidence, right? Hopefully you've got one of those value engineers, right, who's crafting a value-based business case. Everything is bolstered and substantiated with the use cases and the success stories that you have. And then lo and behold, that magic, you know, starts to happen. And then again, so once the sale happens, you follow through, you work with customer service, and the moment the deployment happens, you boondoggle, you pursue that customer, develop the executive relationships, do the value discovery. And so that's how you kind of sustain this virtuous cycle and make it work magic for you. Did I answer your question?
It did. Preach, Andy. Yeah. Thank you.
This is difficult. Yeah. Extremely difficult to present this cycle on PowerPoint. It's a lot. I call it missionary zeal. It's literally the missionary zeal of those you know, missionaries who went and proselytized and converted people. Mm-hmm. You literally need that level of missionary zeal. It can be. I've seen models where product management does it part-time, product marketing does it part-time, sales tries to do it part-time, and again, it falls at the last mile because you need someone who's experienced, who has done it for a living, thinks value, right, and has the missionary zeal to be very, you know, persuasive, be very resilient, and has the energy to follow through and make all this happen. I've been there, done that. You know, April's seen me do that at both Tableau and Alteryx.
So. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think what you're saying is so spot on, is that someone has to be really leading the effort, and particularly from the top of the organization to really get momentum moving forward and keep it moving forward. And a lot of organizations, you know, struggle with this because they you know, think, you know, value is an initiative that happens kind of in one group. But what you're referring to is it happens across the organization. It's more of an ethos that the organization is participating in, not just like a function.
I refer to this as transforming the DNA of the organization. Mm-hmm. It's usually transforming the DNA from selling on product feature functionality or some other attribute to literally selling on value is embraced from sales and marketing to product to customer service and just about to finance, right? It's like I tell people, and it's also a personal philosophy that I've adopted, which is how am I adding value as a chief marketing officer? How is every function, the moment product conceives a challenge or a problem to solve, how is this going to add value to my customer, right? So value becomes kind of the genesis. It's the glue that you know weaves everything together and kind of transforms the DNA of the company. And I've seen I2, I've seen SAP, I've seen Tableau, I've seen Alteryx. We've done that at Medi Analytics. At Verato, again, we are trying to make that happen. So that's what it takes. It's literally altering the DNA of the company.
Perhaps I know the answer to my question when you say, you know, you have to alter the DNA, and altering DNA is not an easy process. And so coming into an organization, you know, you might be like really enthusiastic and passionate about value, but how do you get the entire organization to get on board with that? Because it would require the whole executive team.
Great question. Never easy. I think it helps a lot when the leaders at the top, so for instance, the CEO, you know, believes in it. I'm very, very fortunate, right? My CEO at Verato, who's a Harvard MBA, is a former CMO, very successful, very astute product marketer, which is why I chose to work for him, you know, believes in it. But that's where it starts. So having top-down support is great. But I think the key is showing the voice of the customer. It's when customers are presenting on webinars and they're articulating these use cases and the value associated with it, light bulbs go off. Literally there's the shock and awe within the organization. Because for many of them who are value immature, they've never seen that, right? Mm-hmm. Part of the reason why they've got those fancy value calculators which are shelfware, which have never been used, because no customer has stood up and said, yes, we have deployed these solutions. They've addressed these pain points. It has transformed those business processes. It has morphed our culture. And here is the value that it has delivered. That's when the light bulbs go on. And when you do it time and again, the sellers get excited. It's like, oh my God, why can't we sell on value, right? Why can't we present this, right? I mean, at the end of the day, every contract has got to be signed by a CFO. Why don't we increase the speed? Why don't we make it easy? Why don't we accelerate deal closure and potentially a competitive differentiator by ensuring that we can deliver a value-based contract, a value-based business case to bolster that contract and hopefully make it easier easier for CEO and the CFO to sign off on that contract. So I think that's where it starts. Value in the voice of the customer. I think that's the critical game changer, in my humble opinion and experience. Yeah.
You mentioned it is this living library of customer testimonials about value, and I love that. Andy, is that where you're kind of kickstarting the program at Verato as you kind of get your feet under you there? What are the some of the near-term elements that, without divulging strategy and everything
yeah,
else,
yeah, exactly.
that you recommend exactly. someone to do? Is it literally that just get to the customers first, make sure you understand the realized value and that they're testifying to it, or is it something else?
Yeah, let's not focus on Verato because I'm just getting my feet wet there. But those are that's exactly the way you do it, right? You discover, hey, who are your best customer? What use cases have your customers deployed, right? First step, right? How many of them have been amenable or have come and done things with you in the past and are eager to articulate that value? Lo and behold, that's the low-hanging fruit. Those are the customers you target and prioritize, build relationships with them via your customer advocacy programs, ensure that every engagement is predicated on a conversation about value. So either they have built out a framework, right? Have a value engineering person or a team, start with a person, mm-hmm. morph it into a team that will be there, that builds the relationships, that has that every conversation is based on value, and then you morph that into a library, right? That'll make happen. Right?
Yeah, I really like how you talk about it from the customer's perspective. I mean, if you want to, gain the attention of anyone in the company, hearing how much the customer likes talking about the value, how much impact it's had for them, it really helps to motivate people across the company to listen, right? It's not a one-way communication from vendor to customer, but it's a two-way communication, which builds credibility from both sides. Mm-hmm. So curious, kind of transitioning toward a more thought leadership conversation. One of the things I've noticed is that you've been highly effective in developing out thought leadership in the area of healthcare. And just curious, why do you think this is important for an individual or an organization to put out in the market?
Absolutely. It's very simple, right? And I counsel a lot of younger people who come to me, to navigate, to help them navigate and build the GPSs for the network. I go and speak at multiple, present at multiple, universities across the country. And whenever they ask me, so what is your advice? I tell them that, think about it. It's very simple. You're competing with hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people who are getting similar education. And all of them have two things. They have a resume and a LinkedIn profile. So how do you differentiate yourself, right? And for me, that was exactly, when I discovered my passion for healthcare, triggered by the unfortunate, untimely loss of my mother, came to the realization is how do I stand out, right, amongst my peers? And just harnessing that passion for impacting the lives of patients like us through technology became a very powerful voice within me, right? I remember I used to go to the personalized medicine conference in Harvard Medical School, fascinated by what is this thing called personalized medicine. So went to the first one, came away, wrote up my learnings as a blog post and sent it to the founder of the conference. And he's like, oh my God, this is better than what the professional writers do for us. So can you come and cover the next conference and write the key takeaway, which we publish as an article. And so lo and behold, my foray into thought leadership was born, created like a free blog with Blogsport, which has since morphed a couple of times. And now I've got a nice, LinkedIn has very powerful, fairly good blogging features. So now my blog, with a nice URL, is called healthsciencestrategy.com. Lives on LinkedIn. So if you go and visit my profile, it says visit my website, it automatically takes you there. And it immediately, 60 plus publications, an audience across 47 countries, multiple awards. It instantly differentiates me against my peers, right? Not too many, in all humility, with no semblance of any vanity whatsoever, not too many CMOs in the healthcare business, who have done that. So I think And it's something I'm passionate about. It's not, you can't, it's got to be authentic. It's got to be who you are. That's the key, right? You can't it's lots of people, you know, some thought leader writes an article and they'll reference that and write, you know, a couple of paragraphs. That's not thought leadership, right? It's got to be truly visionary. It's got to be passionate. It's got to be transformative. And it's something that you believe in, right? And then you take risks. So you're not always going to be right. You perhaps going to be trolled sometimes. I've been fortunate that doesn't happen thus far, but that's what it takes. It's finding your voice, finding your passion, your true north and your authentic self, and then putting that out.
Yeah. Andy, I think it's about your why, your purpose, kind of finding that. You said
exactly.
All right.
Yeah.
Being genuine, authentic, transparent, and maybe in some ways oversharing sometimes in it, I think is important because we tend not to share enough in this kind of artificial world that we're living in. And I think that voice is going to come through loud and clear even more. And then it's a personal brand that you're ultimately building.
Absolutely.
You know, I don't tag myself the ROI guy for nothing, right? It was a way that people can remember me. If they forget my name, they always remember that. And so you've definitely done that in healthcare as well, Andy. So well done and great advice. I give that same advice to...
And just to complete the thought, it's...
Yeah.
I told you, value is also personal philosophy. So I try to give as much of myself. So from sharing thought leadership in a healthcare context to sharing my curated music collection of 8,000 plus songs as a DJ for my community, to helping mentoring young people who are looking for advice and looking to learn from my experiences. That's my way of, again, delivering value pro bono without being asked, as just my way of giving back, earning good karma, and in the process, again, finding my true north.
I love that. You've made it a life philosophy. So, Andy, what is the one piece of advice you'd like to leave the Enterprise Value Collective with today?
It's value. Value is not an initiative. It's literally should become the DNA of your organization. The entire organization has to embrace it. If it is just one person or one function, you'll never proliferate. You'll never attain ubiquity, right? Or drive the magic and the virtuous cycle. So I think transforming your deal starts with getting the voice of the customer, helping the voice, becoming a catalyst for the voice of the customer to articulate the value. That becomes a force multiplier. It serves to influence people within the organization. People see the magic of, hey, it's very transformative, right? For say someone who's a coder working, you know, who's writing software code, to see this is, oh my God, this is how it's helping this healthcare organization identify high risk patients early and potentially saving their lives, their entire work acquires new meaning, right? And so when that happens across the organization, the light bulb goes up, the magic starts to happen. Again, it starts to become the DNA of the organization, and then extend that to the selling process, to the go-to-market processes, but really embrace value as a way of doing business across the organization for it to really work, because anything else would be kind of half-assed, and unfortunately, there's time to fail.
Well, your enthusiasm is infectious, Andy. Thank you so much for sharing with us here and joining us on the Value Coffee Talk podcast.
Thank you. Such a pleasure. And looking forward to our partnership going forward.
Awesome. If you like what you heard, please hit the like button, subscribe so you stay in touch with us on the latest episodes. Please sign up for the Enterprise Value Collective if you haven't done so yet. LinkedIn.com, GeniusDrive.com website. That lets you stay in touch with us on the latest events, tools, insights, research. Got some new research coming out soon. So, Andy, thank you again. And until next time, our Enterprise Value Collective, keep sharing and growing together.
Absolutely.